Okay, welcome to Emek HaMelech, Eish Kodesh, and Rabbi Leibowitz. He doesn't usually let me, he never lets me introduce him. He's going to probably cut me off any second now. But I guess as a bracha, before he cuts me off, he can't turn down a bracha. He can't turn down a bracha from Malach, he can't turn from bracha of a Hedyo. So just a bracha to Rabbi Leibowitz that he should continue the wonderful work that he does. He's a person who doesn't need any introduction. We usually say when a person doesn't really have anything to say about him, he's got plenty to say about him. He certainly does not need an introduction anywhere, and certainly not in this kehila. So I give you a bracha that you should continue to be Mavritz Torah in the way you do, with a great humility.
Hey, Mama. Thank you very much. Rosh Chodesh Rebbe, it didn't even occur to me that Rebbe would be here. So I'm a little bit nervous, but versus Rabbi Levin Shlita. The truth is, the topic that we spoke about. Did we advertise the topic?
Yes.
I can't speak the last minute. Okay. So the topic that we we're going to be speaking about for the next little bit. It's a little bit sad that we have to. It's more than a little bit sad. It's sad that this topic even gets spoken about or needs to be spoken about and needs to be dealt with. But the topic is the interesting shailas that come up this time of year, and it's something that really strikes you as powerful when you spend some time in Eretz Yisrael and then you come back. So last week I was in Eretz Yisrael all week, and like there was no remez, there was no hint to anything different around this time of year, except for the aftermath of Hanukkah. Some people still had the menorahs there, you know, outside the house because they hadn't cleaned up yet. You know, that's it. It's the aftermath of Hanukkah. You didn't feel, you know, the yeshivas were getting back into full swing because, you know, that kind of thing. But you didn't get a sense of anything different. And then you come here, and you know, even Al Karchenu, without even looking for anything. Even a person doesn't have, you know, not turning on television and not watching movies, the seasonal movies and everything that come out. Even without all that, you walk into a store and all of a sudden there's a niggin in your head. Say, in a chinami, it was written by a yid, but you know it's not a Yiddish niggin. And you know, a person has like this. It just takes over a person. I about 3 years ago, I got a phone call from a younger Rav who told me that it was his first year in Rabbanus, and a fellow came over to him in shul, and this guy happens to be unemployed right now, so he's looking to make money however he can, and this fellow happens to have a very nice white beard, and he's blessed with sparkly blue eyes and a very healthy gut, or unhealthy as the case may be, and he wanted to know if he can just work as a mall Santa. You know, make a little bit of money. So the young Rav was like stunned that a Yid would think of such a thing. I was telling this to my good friend Rabbi Aryeh Cohn, and he told me that he remembers as a little boy when he was visiting his grandparents in Cleveland, his grandfather took him to the mall, just down, walk around, and out of character, his grandfather said, "You want to go sit on Santa's lap?" And he said, "Well, why would I want to sit?" But he was 4 years old, 5 years old, he didn't know. And he goes up, and the fellow says to him, Little boy, what do you want for Hanukkah?" And he looks at the man and he realizes it's the fellow that sits right behind his grandfather in shul, and that's what he was doing. So I was mentioning this to my shir in DRS. This is 4 years ago, actually. It's 4 years ago because I remember the boy that reacted to this, and I just saw him in Eretz Yisrael. He's in his third year in yeshiva. So one of the boys reacted, and he said, "What's so terrible? What's so terrible about Santa Claus?" So I said, what do you mean? Do you go to Santa? He said, "No, but you should know." This boy said, "I'm from Jamaica Estates. And in Jamaica Estates, there's a very wealthy non-Jew who has a giant house with a huge lawn. And every year around this time, he makes like a big event. He has a bouncy house, and he hires a guy in a red suit, and he comes and he has a huge event, and he's giving out candy and he's giving out food, and it's like a free carnival that this fellow sponsors, and a lot of the neighborhood children all come and they go and they sit on Santa's lap, and Santa says, 'What would you like?' And the boy says, you know, an iPad, and he gives them a basketball. You know, they have he's not going to give them iPads, but you know, he gives them a little gift to every kid." So the Jewish kids wanted to come also. So this boy in my shir, his name is Eitan, said to me that in fact this fellow realized that so many Jewish children were coming, and children from homes that are Shomer Shabbos were coming, and he wanted to accommodate them because they can eat the hot dogs in it. So he asked this Talmud of mine, Eitan. He said, "Can you do me a favor? I'll pay you $50 and take my credit card. Go to a kosher supermarket and buy kosher food, buy kosher snacks, so that the Jewish children, I could set up a table that's kosher at this big event." So he said, "Is there something?" The boy said to me, Eitan said, "Is there something wrong with that?" So it's an interesting question, because on the one hand, is there something wrong with that? On the one hand, yeah, I mean, there's something wrong with this whole picture. On the other hand, if the mitzvah is that all these children are coming and that everyone's going to be participating, so you're going to be matzel them from eating machalos asuros. So maybe better that they should eat kosher food. So I said to Eitan, "How did this guy come to you? Did you? And I shouldn't have asked it publicly. I said, did you used to go to this event?" He said, "Yeah, when I was younger." So he was in 11th grade at the time. I said, "Younger, you mean like 10th grade?" He said, "No, 9th. So wasn't so much younger. But so I thought maybe we'll talk a little bit about some of these shailas, about Eitan's shaila, the shaila whether the fellow is allowed to work as a mall Santa, which is, not really a shaila, but it opens up different doors of halacha that we're able to identify different halachas, so we can use it as a Pesach to learn some something meaningful. I'll just give you one more shaila that came up a number of years ago. There's one of our close chaverim, at the time before he bought his house in North Woodmere, was renting a house in North Woodmere, and he noticed, he was renting from a non-Jew, and he noticed in the backyard there was a, I don't remember, there was a statue, and the statue in the backyard was a lady holding a baby. And he realized what this statue was. This was a very clear religious symbol of a Christian symbol. So as a good Jew, he calls up the landlord and he says, "Can you do me a favor? Please get this off the property while I'm going to be renting the house." So they said, "No. We still own the house. It protects the property." It happens to be a few months later, Sandy came. It did not protect the property. Just, you should know, in case you had any hava mina. So, but he didn't. What do I do with this thing? Am I allowed to stay in this house with this thing in my backyard? Can my children play in the backyard? This is what happens, when in the best of times in Galus, this is what happens. In the worst of times in Galus, it's much, much worse. But this is in the best of times in Galus, and this is what we face, this constant assault of things that are so foreign to us. And, we typically think of Christianity as like the more tame of the religions as far as it relates to the Jewish people. But, of course, historically, that was not at all true. If anything, Islam was much, much nicer to us historically, even though the Mitzvahs today may be a little bit different. And this is these are the kinds of issues. So let's go back to the fellow who wanted to work in the mall on his to make some extra money. And so one of the interesting things about halacha, whenever you study anything, any shaila in halacha, whenever you look at it, you always have to, the trick is to always identify the issues. Like, how many different issues are there over here? Sometimes it's obvious. Like in this case, the young rabbi in his first year knew to tell the guy, "No, you should not be doing this." But still, how many issues? How do I identify what the technical problems are? There's a famous maisa, they say, of Rav Chaim Brisker. Chaim Brisker was obviously a very great Lamdan, and they tell a Maisa to try to demonstrate the link between Lamdus and Halacha, to try to demonstrate how it's important to be a Lamdan in order to be able to deal with Halacha. Happens to be Chaim Brisker was known, for whatever reason, because his lamdus was so overpowering, probably we've pretty much taken away half of his legacy, because really what he was known as b'chayav was a tremendous bal chesed. He was known as his door was an open door. Someone once asked Chaim Brisker, "Why do you have a door in your house? It's just everyone's coming in and out all the time. What do you even need a door?" He said, "Because Shita Sarambam is you're not chayv mezuzah unless there's a door. And that's a machmir for Shita Sarambam. So I put a door in the house." If people wanted to post community announcements, they would put it in Chaim Brisker's house because everyone knew that it was Rosh Hashanah, that people were coming in and out constantly. Like Rabbi Yudin in Fairlawn, where it's just like if you want the world to know, that's it's just mamish and an open door to everybody. But Reb Chaim Brisker, the story they tell is that another Rav was challenging this whole lumdus. They didn't like this whole his whole way of analyzing things. So the other Rav said, you don't need any of this. If you're going to be a Rav, you're going to pasken shailas, you don't need any of this. So Reb Chaim Brisker said, oh yeah, let me ask you a shaila. Let's see if you can answer the shaila. And he said to him, imagine two people are cooking right next to each other. A Jewish woman is cooking kosher meat. Non-Jewish woman is cooking non-kosher meat, same kind of meat, and they're cooking right next to each other. A piece of meat flies out of the non-Jewish woman's pot. She accidentally flicks it with a spoon and lands into the Jewish woman's pot, right? But we don't know the exact size of the piece of meat and the ratio of the non-kosher meat to the kosher meat. We can't tell. Indeterminate size, right? So what's the halacha? We know for sure the majority of what's in the Jewish woman's pot is kosher meat, but we're not sure about whether they're shishim or not. So what do you say? So the fellow says, well, this is the ABCs, if anyone who ever studied for smicha. We know that midaraisa min bimino is batel berov. Midrabanan, you need shishim. So you definitely have rov over here. You have a suffix whether you have shishim, suffix drabanan, lakula, so it's kasher. So Chaim Brisker said, yeah, but you're forgetting that the woman who's cooking the non-kosher meat probably didn't do malicha on the meat. So there's dam in the meat. So it's not just nisr nevel, it's nisr dam. And dam with basar is min b'sheino mino. So min b'sheino mino midar raisa, you need shishim. So the guy said, oh, Taki, you're right. I didn't think of that. You're right. You need shishim, and on a daraisa level, safi daraisa l'chumra. So he says, well, the dam was already mevushal. And according to Rav Rishon, dam that's mevushal doesn't have a din of dam midaraisa, it only has a din of dam midarabana. So it's vayter only a safik drabana. So he said, Taka, you're right. I didn't think it. And the story goes on. I think there are like six steps to the story of how he goes. So that's used as a story to demonstrate that when you approach any given shayla, you have to really be able to break it down to its component parts. So what's so bad, if someone were to ask, what's so bad about being a mall Santa? What are you doing that's so terrible? So what are the yisurim involved? What? Chukasagayim is the most right, the most blatant and obvious one, right? That's the right. Very good. That's obviously the clearest issue. So as far as Chukasagayim is concerned, it's interesting to look at the gedarim exactly of what is Chukasagayim, because it's interesting to see what would be included and what would not. You know, it happens to be that if you look historically at what Santa is, I just did some research on the internet, and according to the History Channel. Website, not the channel, but the History Channel website, that it's a really a combination of a lot of different things. Like this is not, there's no one that believes it's a meaningful symbol in religion. Meaning there's no basis of any religious belief in what he's become. It's much more of a commercial thing. People say Coca-Cola invented him. That's not true. Coca-Cola didn't invent him. They cheered him up a little bit. It used to be one of the earlier presentations of what this fellow was that he was a very mean fellow. You better not shout. You better, because he's coming. He's, you know, like it was a very, it was something to scare the children. And then they changed it and they made it more cheerful and they made him jolly and whatever. But it doesn't seem that it's like a direct relation to anything that they actually believe in. So the question then becomes, so is that Chukas Hagayim? So the definition of Chukas Hagayim is laid out very clearly in Yardei and some Kufay and Ches in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch writes, Ein holchen bechukos of the chavim. We don't follow the chukos of the chavim. Vel yilbush malbush miyuchadahem. We don't wear the clothing that's miyuchad for them. Vloyigdal tzitzas rosho kamo tzitzas rosham. You don't grow a chup the way they would, or whatever it is exactly. They used to have a haircut where it was shaved on the sides and they would grow long. Machlokas Rishonim, exactly where they would grow long, but they would grow long somewhere in the middle or the front or the back, whatever it was. But that was the popular haircut. Remember when I was a teenager in the 90s, that was the popular haircut. Everyone would get the shaved sides and mushroom or whatever. So it's not clear if this is a mushroom, but it was something that was like. That was clearly a non-Jewish haircut. Exactly what we're describing, not to shave the sides of the head. And you shouldn't build places that look like Heichalos of the Chavim. Says the Ramah, We should be completely separate from them in the way we dress and in the way we act. You know, there's a stunning line in the Rambam, the beginning of the 11th parak, the Rambam, when he talks about the requirement to be separate from the Goyim in the way that we behave and in the way that we act, in the way that we dress, the Rambam writes a kesheim. He says, just like Deos Seyem Shonos, from our Deos, just like we think differently than they do, just like we are different, so too it should be reflected in our external behavior. It's a very important line because the Rambam's making an assumption. But he's making an assumption that we hope is true, that they will say and show us that we are in fact different and we know that we are different. So too our malbushim, the way we dress, and all of our external appearances should be different. But so what does that mean? So Shachty used to always say, so what, just because the French like French fries, it means I'm not allowed to eat French fries? Meaning, how do you define what's called? He said, he'd say, just because, they decide that short jackets are a thing, that you buy a suit, it comes with a short jacket, it means that it's usher to wear a short jacket that everyone has to wear long. Meaning, how do you define exactly what's called chukas hagayim? So the Ramag goes further and he says, "V'kol ze eino asur ela b'davar shenagu ba'ov dechavim l'shem pritzus." It's only if they do it l'shem pritzus. Kigon shenagu lilbosh malbush madumim. Oh, what an example! They wear red. So if you wear red, that's also a violation of chukas hagayim. So maybe that's, he opened up a second issue for us. Then not only general chukas hagayim is involved over here, but dafka wearing a red suit may be problematic. Right? I once got a Shiloh woman texted me, I want to buy red sneakers. Am I allowed to buy red sneakers? So I didn't understand exactly what she was asking, but she was asking this halacha. That is, are you allowed to wear red? But if it's a particular beggar of pritzos, now beggar of pritzos doesn't mean that it doesn't cover enough of the body. It means that it's attention grabbing. Right? That's the beggar of pritzos. Gemara in Brachos tells us that one of the Amoraim saw a woman that was wearing a beggar of pritzos. So what did he do? He thought she was a Jewish woman and he ripped it off of her. And now, if it was beggar of pritzos that it wasn't covering enough of the body, ripping it off of her would be even worse, right? It doesn't solve the problem. No, it was something that added a certain flair, a certain color, drew attention. So he ripped it off. It turned out she was a non-Jew, and she said, "Hey, what are you? You know, why are you doing that to me?" And there was a whole interesting conversation. "What's your name?" "Masa, Masa, Masa." "And you cost me 200 zuz. I owe you the money." Interesting discussion over there, which opens up a whole different sugya. But that's a beggar of pritzos. Oh, bedavar shenagu leminagu lechok ve'in tam bedavar, or anything that there's no logical explanation for. De'ika lemechash be'mishum darkei amor v'shiyishbo Shemetz avodus kol chavim avosayim. And there's the key line, I think. Now, what does Rama say? Okay, is it pritzus to be a Santa? Okay, maybe yeah, maybe no, depending on what you hold about red begadim. They say that Rav Steinman once came to Siyum Masechta and he saw that there were red tablecloths and he made them change the red tablecloths. Right? Different poskim have different approaches to just how bad red is and what the limitations on the color red are. But even leaving aside the red, okay, so assume that it's not a beggar of pritzus to dress up this way. But anything that doesn't have a tam because of a chashash that it might have a shemetz avodas kochav me'avosayim. That it might have some. So, okay, as we said before, this character comes from a lot of different places, but shemetz avodas kochav me'avosayim, certainly so. Meaning it certainly comes from, or at least a chashash, that there's some, one of the elements of this character, as we know him, is a shemetz avodas kochav me'avosayim. That would certainly be the case. And Rama writes, but something that's l'toeles, kigon shadarkan shekol mishu hu rofi mumcha yesh bel malbush miyuchad. If something has a toeles, like you go to a hospital, you need to be able to identify the doctor. So the guy wearing the long white coat, that's the doctor. So that makes sense, because I don't want to accidentally ask the orderly to give the medication or to diagnose something. So you have to know who the doctor is and who the nurses and who the orderlies are and who the visitors are, who's wearing a visitor. So that's not going to be a violation of chukas hagayim. I once had the shayla, I'm still not sure. What happens if you have something that's yesh toelas bedavar, right? That there's good reason for it, but you also know that it has a shemetz avodas kochav me'avosayim. I mean, the Rama, he draws this contrast. Anything that has no reason, right, there's no logical good explanation for it, we have to be choshesh, maybe it has Shem and Tzavot's Chavim, and therefore it's Aser. But if there's a perfectly good reason why it's done, and it has a very good practical benefit, I actually wanted to ask Rebbe about this once, because I was looking into yoga, right, where yoga comes from. So I heard Rebbe is a fan of you, right? Yeah.
I never did it.
Oh, okay. So, so meaning it's definitely a toelas, but it might have some of the moves, some of the, so certainly, right, again, I'm cough off to whatever Rebbe says, but I would imagine the saying certain incantations while doing it should be, should certainly be avoided, because that's clearly a Shem Tzavot Tzchav Me'avos saying. Right, so where does that fit? I'm not 100% sure, but over here, you know, this is something that's, of course, you know, you could logically explain why giving gifts cheers people up, and why having a character or a mascot or something cheers people up, but that's not what we mean by toelas. Meaning, this is clearly some practice that comes out of nowhere. It's not something we do year round or they do year round. That obviously has a Shem Tzavot Chavim Me'avos Sehem. So I would think that would be the most basic and obvious reason that it's Aser. But there may be other reasons also. There may be other things also. What are the other problems? So and Snogeya Ta'as L'Maisel also. Because without saying the words, what does this fellow say when each child comes to him? Mary. Right? He wishes them, happy holiday or whatever. And however he does it. So are you allowed to do that? So that's also not something that's so pasha that you're allowed to, Rav Shechtu thought that we're not even allowed to say happy holidays. You're not allowed to, the Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to go to the base of Ovid to greet them. On their holidays, but if you meet them in the street, you should say it, but in a more like undertone kind of way, where you're not the COVID Rosh, kind of thing, like a Tisha B'Av response, if someone is Shoal B'Shlomo, that's the way you should respond when it comes time to their holidays. Rosh Hashanah, you say, you can't even say season's greetings, which is not really, that's like if you're a card, you could say season's greetings. I don't think humans don't really, I don't think people really say season's greetings so much, but I asked Rav Zilberstein once what to do about such a thing, about whether you're allowed to say Chag Sameach or something like that, or Yitzchak Zilberstein. So I'll tell you what he wrote to me. He wrote to me, I have the tshuva here. He writes, Yesh makom la'atiro mishum Eva. So there's a reason to be makel because of Eva. Gitin samach beza meralav, lo yikane sadun lebeza shalad chavim biyom chag or itin lo shalom, v'tso b'shuk, nosin lo b'safar rava b'kovid rosh, as we just mentioned. If you see him in the shuk, Shulchan Aruch paskins this in Yardeis him kuf mem ches, Shach says, dafka shalom aser, aval bracha de leka shem leka kpeda. But stam, to give a bracha where there's no shame Hashem, because Shalom is one of the shames of Kadosh Baruch Hu, so no shame Hashem, then there's not going to be a kpeda. And therefore, he says, when there's a chashash eva, it's going to be mutter, as long as she'inam ovdei avodazara el mesham reminag avoseihem. V'gam she'ino holich lebeiso el pogsha b'derech. So as long as you don't go to his house, and they're just minigav same day, in which the large majority are, but you have to know there are some religious ones, religious people also, people who are deeply religious. So that would be a second issue.
Is that okay for happy holidays? But how about Mary?
So that's a different issue, because you're also not supposed to be maskir shem elohim. Just in general. And by the way, to say the X is not a Jewish invention, right? To say Xmas, that's also that's a Greek letter that actually symbolizes what they are. So it doesn't really solve. That's why we were always taught Kratzmach. We were always taught, like, to say something that's, because that's a kiyum. The Gemara tells us Masech Sanhedrin, Masech Avodah Zarah. Gemara says Kolei Tzenusa Asur Chutz Mi Tzenusa Da Avodas Kachavin, that you're supposed to, your dafka is supposed to make a late sonos out of the Avodah Zarah. Right? My Rebbeim in elementary used to refer to cheese and crackers. Right? That was Yashka. Yashka was cheese and crackers. So I always thought it struck me as strange as a kid. But that's a kiyum, meaning that's a kiyum of making a late sonos of the Avodah Zarah. So probably it's best not to say the name of the Avodah Zarah. It's just so.
Scheinberg used to say, I asked this once about Scheinberg, he said you could say, enjoy your holiday.
enjoy your holiday. Yeah. Yeah. But to say the name of the holiday, I would think that that's, you know, because it's a direct, it's a, even the X is a direct abbreviation for, you know, there is a discussion to whether you say Yashka's name. So the last name, you know, definitely not, because that's saying Divrei Shevach about him. The Gemara tells us that you're not even supposed to refer to, you know, there's a much bigger issue than that. But there's a discussion, for example, whether you're allowed to refer to things that are named after Avodah Zarah, like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Meaning everything's named after Avodah Zarah. Every city in Europe is named after Avodah Zarah. Every Far East, for sure, every city is named after Avodah Zarah. The months January, February, March, April, May, June are all named after Avodah Zarah. July and August are not. They're named after Julius and Augustus Caesar, who decided that we need two more months in the calendar. Because you ever realize, in the lunar calendar, the months make sense, right? According to the way we keep the calendar, it makes sense. The month is an actual cycle in a physical reality. Whereas in the solar calendar, the months are totally arbitrary. Why would February have 28 days and July and August both have 31? It's completely arbitrary. It's totally picked out of a hat. So it's not totally arbitrary because Julius and Augustus Caesar decided to add two extra months in the year. They were originally just 10, and they wanted the nicest months, so they chose the summer months, and they wanted them to be the longest months also. So they both got 31 days because, you know, it's possible they should have a cold month in the middle. So that was that's why September. And October, what does Oct mean? Oct is an octagon. Oct is 8, but it's the 10th month of the year. So how did October end up being the 10th month of the year? Because it used to be only 10 months until July and August messed everything up. So all the names are off. Sep is 7, and Oct is 8, and Nov is 9, and Dec is 10. So that's the names were all messed up. But why is it we're allowed to use any of those shemos? These are all shemos of Avodah Zarah. So generally, what the poskim assume, and there are a lot of tshuvas written on this topic. You know, when you have to write an address on an envelope, and the person lives on Saint Something Street, right? So generally, what poskim assume is that if it's an avodah zarah, that no one is even mesiachis to anymore. That no one in the world would ever think of this as an avodah zarah. It's just because it's a big. Rav Avadia Yosef has a long tshuva about this, and Tzitz Eliezer also has a long tshuva. Should a person be makbid, like when you're writing a check, not to write the English state. Maram Shik was Chassam Sofer. Maram Shik, a Talmud Chassam Sofer, was very particularly a matzevas. Was Eish Lahava about this, that you're going to write on a matzeva the English state. They were very, very adamant about this. So the question was, when you write a check, should you dafka avoid writing those dates? So maybe better, what else can you do? Just write the number. That runs afoul of a different issue. The Ramban al Torah, Chodesh Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chadashim, that Nisan has to be Rosh Chadashim, and nothing else can be called Rosh Chadashim. So if you're calling January 1, and then it could be a violation of that. So, you know, Rav Avadia says, maybe it's Kedai to be Makbid, to Dafka, use the number when you could run afoul of Shem Avodah Zarah. But when you get to July and on, then use the name, because that's not going to run afoul of Avodah Zarah. That's something else. Okay, such hakpados. I don't know. You can figure out what to do. But Dafka, when there is something, you know, when there was a massacre, Rahman al-Tzlan, by the Chabad house in India a number of years ago, so the name of the city was a name that was totally unfamiliar to me, because when I grew up, the city was called Bombay. And all of a sudden, it had a different name. I didn't even realize it was the same city, but it was the same city. So where did that name come from? Because apparently its original name was based after the Shem Avodah Zarah. And then when the British had it, they changed the name to corrupt the name, and they made it Leitzenus of the Avodah Zarah, and they called it Bombay. And then when they went back to their original Yichus, they went back to the to calling it by the Shem Avodah Zarah. So by cities in India and the like, it's much more tricky, because people are still Mesiaches to these Avodah Zarahs. In every city has like a temple where there's this Getchka in the temple, and it's called by that name, and the whole city is called by that name. So a person has to be a little bit. It's not as pashut that you're allowed to say the names of all those cities in places where the Avodah Zarah is still an inyan. So certainly that issue you run afoul of, that a person is going to go and greet using the shame of the holiday. That's probably not right either. And then you also think about, just what does this person do all day? He has people come and sit on his lap. Who sits on his lap? Whoever wants to sit on his lap, sits on his lap. There are teenagers that go to the malls and they sit on his lap. Boys and girls, teenagers, will come and sit on his lap. So, okay, exactly what age you're allowed to take a girl who's not your daughter to sit on your lap? Is it dafka at the age of 3, or maybe when she becomes a young lady? We once asked Rav Shechter whether he follows the Chazanish and the Mishnah Berurah on this, right? At what age does a child have to start dressing b'tznius? A lot of times parents want to know. What age does parents tend to look at their own children as like cute little babies, always. Like even when the child's 50, 60 year old, my little younger, right? It's a cute little. So parents a lot of times don't realize that their little girl is not a little girl anymore, and she shouldn't be dressing like a little girl anymore. They don't realize that just because you see her that way, the whole rest of the world doesn't necessarily see her that way. So a lot of times people make the mistake, in the opposite direction, way too much. But there is a machlokas whether the age of 3, which is the Shita of Chaznish, or when she becomes a young lady, when she doesn't look like a baby anymore. So Shechter said the way he used to measure that was when he would have his Talmidim over, when his daughters were very young, would they be embarrassed to take his daughters on their lap? So if, they wouldn't take a 9-year-old daughter on their lap, that would be strange, that would be ridiculous. So, but a 4-year-old, they would. So that's the way he related to that shaila. But here's this guy, he's going to be taking, so, there are people, and I know not here, I know Rebbe has a very unequivocal stance on this. There are people that sort of stretch what's called b'derech chiba and shelo b'derech chiba in terms of negiah and handshaking and things like this. But there's no one. I mean, you can't putting someone on your lap. It's not shaykh. I mean, there's no there's nothing to talk about. So that l'chara would be another major issue relating to this. But I was thinking, okay, so good. So what about this young man, this Eitan? Is he allowed to buy the snacks? So what are the issues for him? What's the problem? Or what's the... Would you say better yes, better no? So is this Lifnei Iver or Masayeh? So which way is the Lifnei Iver? Right? Is it Lifnei Iver to buy it or Lifnei Iver not to buy it? So on the one hand, once he buys the snacks, then, they'll have a big OU on the table. they'll have the advertise that all the kids who keep kosher are allowed to come here. So maybe more children who otherwise wouldn't come would come. But on the other hand, all these children are coming. The guy initially told them, go buy hot dogs and buy whatever. He said, no, it's hot dogs. You don't know what you're getting into already. You're going to eat bishalakum and everything. He said, no, chips and cookies. But is this going to be a lifnever one way or the other? So I thought it's a davar pashut, and again, just Lenny's deity, I don't know that I'm correct. The davar pashut that he should not do this. He should not be involved in this. He said, but the guy's offering me $50. You learn to sacrifice more than $50 for Yiddishkeit. One day you'll pay tuition, you'll be zocha. You'll sacrifice more than $50 for Yiddishkeit. So, but why is the davar pashut not? So I was thinking the following. There is a discussion in Poskim about about Lifnei Iver in general. Shulchan Aruch paskins that you're not allowed to give food to somebody who's not going to say a bracha, who's not going to wash until Tilas Yadayim, because it's Lifnei Iver, you're being machshil him in the Yisra of eating without a bracha. It's also the Hanos Melon Nazablo bracha, it's Kilo Ma'al, as if one violated Mi'ila, so you're not allowed to give food to someone who's not going to say a bracha. So there's a big literature in the poskim, the contemporary poskim, Shlomo Zalman has a big tshuva about what happens if, let's say, Lamashal, you're moving, and it's July. Right, it's the middle of the summer, and it's 100 degrees outside, and the movers are schlepping in and out, and you're a Yid, you have lots of svarim. I remember when I moved from Cedars to Northwood, the movers were like, cursing, do you read all these books? You better read all these books, because they're heavy, schlepping back and forth. So you have these non-religious guys that are schlepping your books back and forth, you're schlepping your svarim, schlepping your furniture, and it's the schwitzing, so can you offer them a drink? Right, so on the one hand, black and white in Shulchan Aruch, no, you can't offer, if you're not going to say a bracha, you can't offer a drink. So that all these different eights, maybe you say a bracha and they'll say amen or something, but it's not always so easy with movers to, okay, let's sit around the table now, and it's not always so easy to handle. So Shlomo Zalman has this a tshuva where he says, pashut that you're allowed to. He thought it's clear that you're allowed to. Why isn't it Lifnei Iver? He says, well, you're going to face Lifnei Iver in one direction or the other. Either you're going to be machshel them to eat without a bracha, or you're going to be machshel them to think that all religious Jews are totally inconsiderate and don't care about anything. So you can be machshel them in one direction or the other. Which is the bigger lifnei iver? So obviously the Chilul Hashem is the bigger lifnei iver. So he says it's not a ma'isav hachshala, it's a ma'isav hatzala. You're saving them from the bigger lifnei iver. So even though from the bigger iser, so even though you are creating the situation, giving them, which sounds like, you know, a lifnei iver d'araisa, it's shrei avri dinara. They can't do it without you giving them the food. They can't eat this food without a bracha unless you give them the food. But nevertheless, it's a maisa hatzala. That's what Shlomo Zalman tries to say. So Rav Asher Weiss in a tshuva disagrees with Shlomo Zalman. He says lo mistamar kla lomar deze mugdar katzala. He says I don't think you can call this a hatzala. They call od ein aver muzmenis lefanav ein kan hatzala menachet. If the aver is not there right in front of you, and then you're not saving him from the Avera. I mean, it's not like there's an Avera right there that you're diverting him away from that Avera. But you're giving him something that he's not going to say a bracha on, so you're dafka being machshel and you're not being matzil at all. So says Rav Asher Weiss, though, however, it's mutter anyway. Why is it mutter anyway? So he has a mechudesh dekasvara, where he writes that, in his opinion, Rav Asher writes, that matzinu, that sometimes we're matir to violate an isur gomor biyadayim, kidei limnoa es mahus ha'inyan milava la'olam b'mida gedola yoser. That sometimes you could do a particular isur in order to prevent a greater iser of the same category. Meaning, not that it's not an iser. It is an iser. But sometimes you have to do the iser in order to avoid a greater iser. I mean, Shlomo Zalman said, now, lifnei iver l'asitid michshel, you can't call this an iser. You can't call this achshol. You're not being machshil. You're being matzil. So mele, it's not an iser to begin with. Rav Asher suggests differently. And he has 11 kedarka b'kodesh. He likes to develop yesodos and bring rayas from everywhere. So he has 11 rayas to this yesod. Remember, Rav Asher just recently came out with a sefer on klalim relating to mitzvos. You know, in mavir no mitzvos, riz magdim the klalim of mitzvos. So my brother years ago wrote a sefer on klalim of mitzvos and the chayyadam klal samaches. My brother wrote a whole sefer. So I saw Rav Asher Weiss. He said, "I'm going into competition with Avi Liebowitz. I'm going into competition with your brother." So I said, "What do you mean?" He explained to me what he meant. He said, "But don't worry. I thought of klalim he never would have dreamed of." Rav Asher is very creative. He always has. So this is one of his klalim. I think there's a big nafkamina though between the two attitudes, meaning the two approaches. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, it's, you have to look at its core. What are you doing over here? Is this, you know, is your kavanah to be machshil? Is this an act that you can label as a hachshala, or is it an act that you can label as a hatzala? Whereas Rav Asher says, no, of course it's a hachshala, but a lesser hachshala. So I would think that if a person is buying the snacks for a party, even if you have a kavanah to be matzil, even if your kavanah is to be matzil from something, but buying the snacks for a party that is clearly meant to be a party for this for a holiday that is not our holiday, that is very much a holiday of Avodah Zarah, so that's a maisa of participating in that holiday, even if your kavanah is for the better. So I would have thought that certainly Baruch Shlomo Zalman's definition, that it's not a maisa hatzala, that's already a maisa achshala, because you're participating in the party in its entirety. So anyway, so at the end of the day, there's a lot to talk about in terms of the red suit also, and where red fits into the picture. But as far as these shilas are, oh, the last shilas, right, I wanted to come back to that one also. What about the statue in the backyard? So what's the exercise? I'll just close with this.
Cover it up.
So that's what he did, and that's what I told him to do. He put it behind bushes. I told him you should put a tarp over it or something. Rav Zilberstein, Kedarka B'Kodesh, Rav Zilberstein writes back to me about that issue. Meikra din ein baza iser, sharei abayis shel agoy. Meikra din, it's not us because the house belongs to a guy. Ulam, kasav harama, hasocher bayis, mevichavim, yesh lahachmir, shalol laniach sham demus avod zchavim shalol vichavim. But the Rama says we should be machmir to keep these things away. V'lachein, im ein lo etza acheres, Yatmino v'yanichu b'beis hakisei b'mekomo haro'ilo. Keep it in the Beis HaKise where it belongs. That may not be the most practical etza. If you're trying to keep it away from your children, will be in the Beis HaKise. But in the backyard, in the corner of the yard, is a large property under a tarp. Ultimately, they bought the house and they were able to get rid of the getchka from the house. But that was the shaila at the time. So Mitzvah Hashem, we should be zochet to see a time where the gullus will end, and we're not going to have to deal with these gullus kind of shailas. You know, we'll be all be able to go to Eretz Yisrael. Hashem na'avod chaviyura kimei olam uchshanim kadmoni.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.